You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to episode 46 of the Rex Chapman Show with my super dope homeboy from the L-Town, Josh Hopkins. What up, Josh?
What up, Rex? Looks like a beautiful day in Brooklyn. I have from this point on, a delineation, if you wouldn't mind doing me a favor and making that from the Lex Town. I don't want people to get confused.
You from know, the Lex Town.
Louisville,
from the L-Town.
You know. And then whoa. And then I'm always like, eh, and then it looks like I'm putting on my L's. And
oh,
then
that's right. Like, you can't
whoa,
do that.
Whoa, we can't.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I that's just, okay. I humbly.
From the Lex Town.
Yeah.
From the Lex Town.
Do you mind?
No, I don't. It doesn't roll off as well, just lyrically, you know, because I'm really into the lyrics.
Yeah, you
and,
are.
And I'm a bit of a wordsmith.
You are.
You know,
you are.
Yeah. But I'll take it under consideration. Take it under advisement.
Okay, let me know.
Hey, did you read anything this week?
Oh, we're going to do book club. Yes, book
yeah.
club. I know that's going to throw people off, but I actually did. And I did. I went big. I read one of the classics since last time we saw. I read Of Mice and Men. And it is brilliant. Gary Sinise was in it. And John Malkovich, it was incredible. I thought he was like a little bunny.
I think that was a movie. I think you're talking about it. You watched Of Mice and Men.
I read the.
I didn't read anything at all.
All
right.
Did you read anything?
I read some Netflix. That was about it.
Oh,
but
cool.
Other than that, nope, didn't read anything.
Well, that's been book club.
For episode 46, Josh. Not many 46s. It's a shitty number for sports. And by shitty, I can only think of a couple of people. And we had to really research those. And just not off the top of your head. We got Andy Pettit, 46.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Aaron Bain, 46.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of another 46?
Mm-mm, mm-mm, mm-mm.
But what number was Chuck Muncy?
46. I'm just kidding. I have no idea.
No, he's not. But he had a weird number. I remember Chuck Muncy.
That's the kind of thing I would have to break down into, like, my mind would go to a four for me. Well, Houston Powell, my friend Houston Powell's a four. But I feel like Kyle Macy was a four.
What's four?
Four.
And Dr. J.
Go to Dr. J as a six. So
that's how you
bring
remember.
It down that way. You know, like if I was trying to remember, you know, my numbers on the lock, I couldn't go 46. I'd have to break it that way. Whereas
that's right.
You know, it was 23. You know, I can keep 23. I can keep all, you know, 24 for Tom Chambers. but I would have to break that one up. Not a lot of 46s.
Celtics and Warriors.
Yeah.
The series is progressing. Celtics have taken the lead.
It is progressing.
Celtics have taken the lead. We got game four coming up. Game five back in the Bay. Where do you see the series heading, Josh?
I don't know when this will be released, when people see this, but tonight is the pivotal game. I mean, if Boston goes up 3-1, that's a problem. But also, if Golden State wins this, they've suddenly gotten every, you know, they've got home court back.
Yeah,
so
you're right.
I
think Golden State wins game four if Stephen's okay. He got landed on the other night. Was kind of gimpy the rest of the way, came out. If he's okay, I think they win. But we'll see. It's what a fun series. Somebody made a point the other day on Twitter, Dart Adams, who's a huge Celtics guy. He said, he just kind of broke it down. He said, I'm trying to think about why people hate on these Celtics, because if this particular team had on any other uniform, they would be one of the sexiest teams ever. And they really would. They'd have Jaylen Brown, sexy. And Jason Tatum, sexy game. Marcus Smart is the dirt workhorse.
But
for whatever reason, people hate on them because it's Boston, right?
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. You know, you just
don't. They're as sexy as Golden State right now.
Yeah. You just don't think of that green and sexy because you think of the great teams like Bird and McHale and they weren't sexy at all. They were great.
Paul Pierce and it wasn't as sexy of a game. You know what I'm saying? But that team was fun. But it is. It's almost like, because if you put them in the Warriors uniforms or the Lakers uniforms or OKC's uniforms, people would be in love with this team.
Yeah, that's a great point. I love that.
All right, buddy. Well, we've got a great guest today. A terrific guest. Yeah. I can't either. Episode 46. Let's get to it. We've got from Detroit, Fox lead play-by-play voice, NFL on Fox broadcaster and everything else under the sun. We have Augustus Cornelius Johnson Jr. Gus Johnson, what's up, baby?
What's up? The boy king, baby. Man, I got two superstars I'm with today. I'm with the boy king, Rex Chapman. One of the only white boys I know that was in the dunk contest a couple of times. And my man Hop, you know, actor extraordinaire, you know what I'm saying? So this is fun, man. Thanks for having me on y'all show.
Man, thanks for coming in. We're excited.
No doubt. We were talking a little bit before. I want to get into this. You said you got a cousin that's from Kentucky. It's Charles Hurt. Is it your cousin?
That's my cousin.
All right, so Charles Hurt, a famous Kentucky basketball player. But before that, he was a senior in high school at Shelby County High School. And the two best teams in the state were my dad's team at Apollo High School. He was coaching the team. And Charles Hurt, Shelby County Rockets. And Apollo beat Shelby County in a Christmas tournament to give them their only loss. And then they drew each other in the first round of the state tournament. Apollo was undefeated. Shelby County had one loss, and Charles Hurt beat Apollo. I was in the third grade and destroyed me, just destroyed me. But I can't believe you got that Kentucky connection, man.
That's right. Well, you know, my dad was from a place called Lebanon, Kentucky, and then they later moved to Louisville, where they grew up on 14th and Walnut Street. My dad went to St. Augustine Elementary School or Junior High School, elementary school, because he never made it past the third grade. He used to work at the Brown Hotel. Kentucky is a big, 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 big part of my family. My whole family other part of my family used to live in the Beecher Tears. I don't know if you ever heard. You probably hooped back there, did you? In the Beach.
I hooped all over the place in Louisville, so I'm sure I did.
So I'm sure you hooped. It was a great outdoor court. So, Kentucky has a really – we used to drive to Kentucky from Detroit to see family and go to family reunions all the time. So I love Kentucky, man, always have and always will.
Charles Hurt was – I mean, that's my formative years. He played with Derek Hoard and Dirk Minifield, and he – was the original for me guy you didn't want to meet in an alley.
I heard he beat up Charles Barkley one time.
I believe it. He was jacked. I mean, before they lifted like they do now, he was just ripped and thick. And I mean, he was and kind of like not on the court, but off, like a gentle giant type of guy. Yeah, just a great guy.
He ended up working. I've never met him, but growing up as a kid, I used to have, you know how back in the old days, they would have a player picture and inside of it, you could open it up and it would say things about the player. But I used to have it in my room growing up as a kid. And he was a thick dude.
He was big and strong. People, I want to make sure people know, most people don't know, you were a hell of an athlete. I mean, you were all-league shooting guard in high school. You were a quarterback, all-league quarterback in high school, captain of the team, played baseball, and then played 4 years of baseball after that at Howard. When did you fall in love with sports, and when did you even get an itch at all to think, all right, maybe I'm going to do this broadcasting thing? Because you had to have been devoted to sports growing up to play it as seriously as you did.
Well, I wanted to be like you, Rex. I wanted to be a pro at something, but unfortunately, I wasn't good enough. You know,
when did you figure that out?
When I got to college.
Okay.
And I just, you know, I didn't do anything great. I didn't hit for power. I didn't have great speed. I didn't have incredible range in the outfield.
And were you better in baseball? Were you better in baseball or better than in the other sports?
I don't know, man. I just think I was a jack of all trades, but a master of none. And I think that's one reason I'm a pretty good sportscaster. I played hockey from Mite all the way through Bantam as well.
Wow.
Sports is I was a wrestler. For me, sports saved my life. Without sports, man, I don't know what I would have done. It was my salvation. It was my refuge, my sanctum sanctorum. I wasn't a great student. To be honest with you, wasn't even interested in school. I just wanted to play ball because when I play ball, any kind of ball, whether it be baseball, basketball, football, or any kind of game, tiddlywinks, checkers, chess, bumper pool, anything, I could kind of lose myself in growing up in Detroit. You know, just Detroit is a beautiful city. I love my town, but it was hard in my neighborhood. It was dangerous. People got killed. So I just tried to stick my head, you know, in a ball or a bat or a hockey stick or whatever, just to ease my mind and ease my anxiety as a child growing up. And when I got to college, I found out I wasn't good enough to be even considered to be a professional in baseball. So I kind of stumbled on this sportscasting thing, man. And
how old were you? What year?
I was a redshirt sophomore, you know, and I wasn't playing a lot. I was playing, but utility. So I was like the Tommy Brookins of my team. I could play. I played all the positions except pitch and shortstop.
I love that you say that too, because especially with actors and everybody, like, oh yeah, I'd have gone pro, but I had my knee, had a trick knee or this and that. And I was like, no, you're not pro because you weren't good enough to be pro. Same as me. But then every actor, like, yeah, I'd have gone pro, but yeah, I had a thing with my thing. Yeah. And I was just like, no, you wouldn't go pro. That's why you're acting.
That's right.
Hey, Gus, how did you to backtrack a little bit, you talked about, you know, just anything that you could do to take your mind off the stress of growing up where you were growing up. How difficult was it to steer clear of, you know, the violence and or any kind of stuff that you could get into? How difficult was that, and where did that come from to know I can't go down this path?
Well, I had a strong father, first of all, who I feared more than God. Wow. Who, you know, Rex, me and you the same age, and you know, my daddy was from Kentucky, so he believed in a whole different kind of discipline.
Discipline, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it didn't come with a talk.
Yep.
The talk came after the boogie.
Yeah.
So I was afraid of him. And, you know, that kind of thing, I think for me at that particular time in my life was a choice. Meaning, you know, you choose to go into that life. And if you don't choose to go into that life, you know, and the choice that some people make is to go into that life is because of poverty.
Yeah.
So I had got, because I was an athlete, they gave me a pass.
Yeah.
So I was going to private school, trying to do something with my life. I was a baby. And that's usually when they take them around eighth grade, ninth grade, get them working, doing things, you know, for their, well, their companies.
Yeah.
They gave me a pass on that. So I could get on the bus, I could get to school. And then, you know, when I got like to my junior year, and I start getting my name written up in the paper, then they kind of like, they kind of put their arm around me in that regard, you know.
Wow.
I had to worry about that. So they knew I was on my way to college, and maybe I could have been something, you know, bro, some, I don't know what that, you know, they that's what happened.
I get it. You know, growing up in Detroit, a lifelong Detroit fan, how special was it growing up there in the 80s when the Tigers and the Pistons both were world champions?
Well, look at it this way. I wore number 11 in high school.
Of course. Picture, I can still see him. That picture right? On the Sports Illustrated with the Adidas top 10s on, right?
Yes.
Right?
And he had his legs curled up in the air. And I tried to do my my senior picture, action picture, like that. But the photographer, I couldn't keep my legs up in the air long enough. My legs is all coming down. It's such a whack looking picture. I was like, ah. But yo, man, Isaiah Thomas. That's all I got to say. That's my hero. Still is to this day. You say something bad about. I remember I got into a fight in college over Isaiah Thomas. Pistons were playing the Bulls, and one of my best friends was Timothy Conley. Timothy was from Chicago. So, you know, nobody really had a TV. So we all would watch the game in the common area. So the Bulls are playing the Pistons, and Timothy is talking all this trash about Isaiah. And I was like, yo, Tim, man, you need to pump your brakes on talking about Isaiah Thomas, man. You know, we from Detroit, so we don't. And he kept going and going. And then he said something, and I just swung on him. Wow. So all of a sudden, me and him, Timmy and I, are this is my best friend. We hoop together every day when I wasn't practicing baseball. And we rolling on the floor. You know, they break us up. They send me to my room. Timothy goes out into the front, gets a brick, comes to my dorm room because he used to hang in there all the time. He takes the brick, and he throws it and almost knocks my door down. I open the door before he could say anything. Bam, I hit him, and we fighting again, and then they break us up. So the next day, and this is all of Isaiah Thomas, the next day, I'm walking out of the dorm to go to class, and here come Tim. I'm like, oh, shit, I got my good clothes on, and I got my book. I'm about to get down with this. And he bigger than me, too. He was bigger than me. He was like 6'2". And so he walked up to me, and I walked up to him, and he just busts out laughing and smiling, and we hugged each other. It's like, I'm sorry, man. I get a little emotional when it comes to not only the business, but especially.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Over Isaiah.
Over Isaiah. Right.
Yeah, you know, in
10th grade. And I told Isaiah that story, too.
It's great.
In 10th grade, I went away to a school, like a boarding school. My roommate, T. Faircloth, and we both played on the basketball team and great buddies. And then one day, it was when Rex was at Kentucky playing. It was his freshman year. And I don't know, but T. said, oh, Rex, I said, he's just such a pure shooter. He goes, he's not really a shooter. He's more of a scorer. And I was like, what? He says, I said, he's one of the greatest shooters of all time. In retrospect, he's kind of right. He did a lot. He scored a lot of it. But I was so angry. Right. He was like, you're just going to fight me? I said, if you say that again.
Say that again.
So I get it.
Yes.
I get it. I defended this man long before he knew who I was.
And the funny thing is, he was a pure shooter that was also a scorer.
So yeah. Boom. Yeah. In retrospect, I'm sorry, T. I'm sorry, T. Fairclough. My bad.
One question I get all the time is, Rex, how can I break into working in basketball? Or what are the best ways to deepen my understanding of the NBA? And my immediate answer is always sports business classrooms, business of basketball, immersive experience. This is the opportunity of a lifetime. It's an immersive program that takes place inside Summer League in Las Vegas, where you will get training and scouting, media, the salary cap, basketball operations, and analytics from industry leaders. Past instructors and guests include Commissioner Adam Silver, Mike D'Antoni, Masai Ujiri, Daryl Morey, Mike Breen, Zach Lowe, and many, many more. This year's session runs from July 10th to 15th in Las Vegas. So if you're interested, check out sportsbusinessclassroom.com as soon as possible, as space is limited and this program is in very high demand. And I have a discount for you. Enter the code FRONTOFFICE at sign up and get $300 off. That's FRONTOFFICE for $300 off. If you're interested, check it out today at sportsbusinessclassroom.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Gus, I don't want to talk politics, but you studied poli-sci. Why? I mean, where did that come from? Where did that itch? You know, where did you scrap? How? Why did you decide that?
Well, I went to a Jesuit school. It was really hard. I came from the hood, man. So we didn't have the same. You know, you go from a school in the inner city. And then all of a sudden now you're studying with Jesuits, and it was like going from zero to a million, not 100.
Wow. Wow.
I was overwhelmed, especially with the science and the math. That was hard. But I gravitated towards history, and I had two teachers, Mr. Somm, who was my freshman year world history teacher, and Mr. Forrester, who was my junior year government teacher. And they instilled a lot of confidence in me about my curiosity about politics and history. And I remember, you know, I was an athlete, so, you know, and I really wasn't in the school like that. I remember at my junior year, Mr. Forrester pulled me outside of the class and he said, you know, you can do really well in this class. Wow. I just need you to buckle down just a little bit more. You get a good grade in this class because you're saying good things. Just make sure you write your papers and spend some time on your papers and make sure they're grammatically correct. And I got a good grade in that class. I got a B.
Wow.
And for me, that was a big deal at my school. So when I got to college, I thought, well, maybe, man, you know, maybe I'll be a congressman or something. Senator, I didn't know, you know, you a baby.
Yeah,
I didn't know. So I just started majoring in political science and I liked it.
Wow.
At Howard, I liked it. And I love it.
That's amazing. That's so interesting because, you know, you admitted earlier, I didn't even really care about school. I say that as well. I didn't. I wish, looking back, I wish I had cared more. But, you know, that teacher made a profound impact on you, just giving you a little bit of confidence to, right. You know, isn't that amazing? And right. We see it in sports all the time. You know, there's a very thin line between like making it in professionally and not making it. And sometimes it just boils down to someone just believing in you, a coach, a GM, somebody giving you an opportunity, but somebody making you believe in yourself. That's just beautiful, Gus.
Yeah, man, to me, what I've learned as about to be a 55-year-old man that's been in the sports world in a major way. It's all about coaching. Everything is about coaching. Michael Jordan could have been Michael Jordan without Dean Smith. It's just a fact. You know, yet what's that old thing they say about Dean Smith? He held Michael Jordan to 16 points a game, but showed him how to average 30 in the NBA for a career.
Yeah.
So, that little bit of coaching, that little bit of encouragement, that little bit of knowledge, just, you know, just you know, and I'm a very coachable person. That's what I will say about myself. I'm not going to argue with the coach. Just tell me what to do so I can be good. because I want to win. And I know if I win, then the prom queen may want to go out with
you. Smart man. Now that's a politician. That's a politician right there.
Oh, Gus.
And didn't you start with, when you got into broadcasting, were you just like a news anchor? Weren't you like not
no, sports? I've always been a sportscaster.
Always sports. I just figure with the poli sci major, that would make sense. But yeah, it was always sports, huh?
Well, what happened to me is, you know, I started in the poli sci, and then I learned that I wasn't that good in baseball, as good as I needed to be or thought I was, whatever. And then I stumbled into the broadcasting, and then I minored in communications. And when I stumbled into the broadcasting, after I got under the hood, it was over. I mean, really? over. You know, I talk to kids all the time, and you know how kids are, and you know how we were. Well, not you, Rex, because you knew what your destiny was in college.
I did.
But when I stumbled into broadcasting, Pop, like I fell madly in love, like that's head amazing. Over heels,
great.
Obsessive. In love. I knew. Okay. Because daddy said, he said, hey, boy, all this schooling is cool, but you better walk out of there with an education. I mean, you better walk out of there with a job. So you better figure out what your hustle is while you're there.
Wow.
So I'm sitting there scratching my head. I thought my hustle was going to be baseball, but I was delusional. But then I found this. And then when I found this, man, it was like, you know, it was one of those things where break up with your girlfriend. You ain't got no time. You got places you gonna be.
Wow.
So no attachments, no nothing. And
were you naturally good at first? Were you naturally good?
I was naturally good.
Yeah,
naturally
makes me happy.
Because you know, I grew up because I'm a boys club kid. So
yeah, I am too.
Yeah, I started the boys club at 6 years old and went all the way through college. And my mother used to put me in what the boys club would have was oratorical contests and stuff. And I used to win.
Wow.
So I knew I could talk, you know? So once I found it and mommy put me on the right path, I mean, it's been the greatest.
At what age was that?
9.
That's brilliant. Brilliant.
Wow, that is. That's great.
9 years old, man. 9
How,
years old.
Gus, how important was Bryant Gumbel when looking at broadcasters who influenced you, or at least favorites of your mom's?
Yeah, I see you be doing research, man. Bryant Gumbel is – I'm here because of Bryant Gumbel. I'm sitting right here in front of you because of Bryant Gumbel. Because what happened was after I won those oratorical contests, in 1979, rather – when Michigan State played Indiana State for the national championship in Salt Lake City, Larry Bird versus Magic Johnson. You know, I'm from Michigan, so we all love Magic. So we're sitting there watching the game, and the game comes on, and all of a sudden I see this angelic face who looked like me. He was handsome. He had pearly white teeth. He was nattily attired. His hair looked like it was silk. And he was articulate, and it was Bryant Gumbel. And I think my life changed when that game came on. My mama saw that. First of all, I think she had a job time crush on Bryant Gumbel, which most
yeah.
women did back then.
Yes, of course.
But she started beating me over the head with this dude. You know, unfortunately for me, not long after, so 1979, 79, I was born in 67, 77, 78, so I'm 12. So by the time I hit high school, Bryant had transferred from sports to the Today Show.
Mm-hmm.
So every freaking morning, yeah. this dude is in my house. Yeah. And my mother is beating me over the head with him, beating me over the head. Yeah, today, Brian. Hey, boy, did you see today Brian interviewed the president of Venezuela? Oh, and yesterday he talked to the president of Russia. You know, Brian is doing this. Brian is doing that. And look at that suit he had on. Boy, I tell you, man, he look a little bit like you too. Every day for 12. For all of high school. Every day. Every day, man.
Yeah,
to the point where I was like, yo, Ma, check this out. Why you always throwing this dude on me? I don't want to be no Bryant Gumbel. I don't even know it. I want to play second base for the Tigers. I'm going to replace Lou Whitaker. That's my job. That's what I'm going to do. Obviously, she saw me play and she knew that. There was no chance to replace no Lou Whitaker. So she instilled that in me. And then when it was time for college and the applications, I had to fill out the application. She would say, baby, you know, write your essay, fill out the application and give me the application and the essay. And I'll put the check with it. And she would always check out these boxes on communications. So I would get all this stuff on communication. And I was like, why they putting me? So then I got to college and then baseball didn't turn out the way I thought it would. And I'm doing political science, which was cool. I was doing pretty good. I was getting B's without really even trying because of that Jesuit education. But then when I stumbled on the sports casting thing, which was a divine experience, it was almost a weird miracle-like experience. It was a herophony. A herophony is when you experience something divine that you know is divine. And that's what happened with the sportscaster thing when I finally got into it. And everything mommy had driven into me about Bryant clicked.
Wow.
Oh, now. You know, they say a mother's wit, you know?
Yeah.
A mother's love, a mother's knowledge, a mother. She knew. And she planned it out. And even though I didn't want to follow that path, cosmic law forced me to follow it. And that's why I'm sitting next in front of you right now on this crazy great podcast.
Speaking of cosmic law, what
beautiful.
I saw that you were taking some classes at Harvard. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And I saw at one point you said, in one of the classes you're studying, and cosmic law, collective effervescence. Yeah. What? please.
What is that?
Give me your herophony on that.
cosmic law is the way the universe is set up. It's something that goes all the way back to the ancient Aztecs and how they understood cosmic law. And how, basically, it's, you know, they use the word cosmic law, but it's how God has set things up. And things, and what they say about cosmic law is this: cosmic law, it doesn't conform to you, you conform to it. For example, Jesus, his last words on the cross: my God, why have thou forsaken me? Cosmic law would answer, because Jesus, you were supposed to make this sacrifice. You couldn't negotiate around it. And that's what cosmic law is. It's how the universe is set up. And it's something that as human beings, we cannot grasp. We don't understand it. Like Socrates said, the one thing I know is I know nothing. And he was considered one of the founders of Western philosophy, which is a philosophy that we live under today. So that's the system that's created. And the decisions that are made unbeknownst to us that steer us into whatever realms that we go into our human journey. Collective effervescence is... You know, collective effervescence is human beings. You know, we have all these different kind of natures: homo ludic, homo erotica, homo necans. Homo necans are the human killers. homoerotica is our desire to want to feel, to want to touch, to have sex. Homoludic nature is to want to play games, all kinds of games, whether it's the games that we play in sports, or it's the games you play in the office, or it's the games you play with your wife or your boyfriend or your teachers or your bosses, the games that men play. But for collective effervescence, it's being able to have, in order to have collective effervescence, you have to have a shaman or a priest or a rabbi or a reverend. And it's like when you go to church, here's a perfect example of collective effervescence. When you go to church and the preacher or the priest or the rabbi is giving you this rousing sermon and you collectively have this feeling that you rise up to during the sermon, and everybody is connected and everybody is feeling it. Everybody, it's collective in that moment, and that leader is leading you to that crescendo spiritually. And once you attain that, and then the service ends, or even if it's a rock concert, or even if it's a ball game, you know, Kentucky taking on, I've called Kentucky and Louisville before, Kentucky taking on Louisville at Rupp. Even though the Kentucky fans are rooting for the Kentucky fans and the Louisville fans are rooting for the Louisville fans, we're all connected in that 23,000 seat arena, which, by the way, is the greatest arena in college basketball. Wow. It ain't even close.
Wow.
So you rise up, you experience that. And then when the service ends, you come down and you look forward to doing the same thing the next week. So the reason that collective effervescence is important to me is because, you know, sometimes I don't really understand why, and I say this so humbly, why I've had such an impact on people watching games. Because I can't see myself call the game. I can't feel what they're feeling. But what I realized is, in my job, I'm serving as that leader to bring everybody together during the telecast of the game. And what I've been fortunate enough to do through the grace of God, through God working through me and my spirit, I always say a prayer before every game. I say, Lord, let me be the conduit between you and the message you want to get out to your masses. And from the first time I said that prayer, crazy shit has happened, man. Like, I've seen, and I just lose it. I get lost in it. I don't judge it. I just let it go. And from what I'm learning, when I took this Religious Dimensions of Human Experience Apocalypse class with Dr. David Carrasco, bad dude, I realize that's what I've been doing. I've been that leader that has helped establish through the broadcast for 25 years, collective effervescence, that good feeling, man, that good feeling. And yeah, that's what that is.
Well, that, thank you, first of all.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. And I definitely think the cosmic law brought you to this podcast, because we often say that this should be called the Rex and Josh Show, that after every podcast, we feel like shit about ourselves and stupid. Because, and again, there you are, just dropping science, literally, political science. No, and we are, that's a beautiful way to put it, a beautiful thing. And you absolutely are so good at bringing us together, being our eyes and ears. You're always, and you're known for just such big energy and great. You've got some of the greatest catchphrases in all of sports. I want to get to that. And you are eyes and ears. So it feels great to know that that's what you're trying to do, because that's what you do so well. Thank you for that.
I appreciate it. You know, selfishly, the greatest gift that my career has given to me is making people happy. Like, I had a guy, I did the Big Ten Championship. I've done the Big Ten Championship for 10 or 11 straight years. So in Indianapolis, where the game is called at the, what I call the Peyton Manning Dome, Lucas Oil, the booth is right in the stands, kind of. So I can step out and kind of sit down in one of the stadium seats right in front of the booth. So recently, Ohio State fan, big dude, you know, I'm sitting right here and he's down there, maybe 12 yards from me. And he looks at me sitting there and he yells at the top of his lungs, "Gus Johnson, you make me happy."
Oh, that's great.
Then I said, "Thanks, man. I appreciate it." And he goes, "No, Gus Johnson, you make me happy." And embarrassingly, I get that all the time. And to me, that's the gift.
That's the shit.
Tells me I'm doing something right. You know what I'm saying? I'm
just, yes.
Yo, man, sometimes it can bring tears to my eyes. Some the reactions that I get from some of the fans that watch the games. I'm so humbled by it. I just have so much gratitude because, you know, business is business. And you know how that is, Rex. You know how that is.
But, man, have you always been this excited watching hoops, watching sports? And how did people mistake you know, your excitement for inauthenticity at times?
Yeah, you know, that's part of it.
That's crazy to me.
Cynical. Yeah, a lot of people are cynical. But the good thing is I've been doing this now as a network announcer for 27 years. So if you can't figure out whether or not I'm authentic or not, then, you know, that's your business.
Were you like this as a kid? Were you loud watching games? Did you get into the games and were you emotionally invested in them? Like, I can imagine you were, Josh and I, you know, coming up in Kentucky, much like yourself, either playing a sport or watching a sport to escape whatever else is going on in your life. But were you that way? Did you get invested in games you had nothing to do with?
You know, Rex, I'm just loud. Loud, man. Like, my family is loud. We laugh loud. We love loud. We loud people. And we're not afraid. And as an athlete that played all the different sports, you know how it is, Rex. You're a pro. You got to be loud sometimes. Yeah. You know, let's go. Here we go. Come on. Like, let's win. Let's have fun. Let's win. I want to win.
Yeah.
I have a problem with losing.
Same. But, you know, it you say it so well. It's just it's funny that you say it is authentic. But you make a good point in that it sometimes in sports, in order to win, you got to be corny.
Right.
You got to. Let's go.
Let's go.
What are we doing? You know, it's okay to have a little coolness slip out at times, right? Because you care.
Right.
Because you care.
Right. Right. Yeah, man. I mean, my whole thing has always been, I love to delight in the excellence of other people. That's my mantra as a sportscaster, to delight in the excellence of other people. And as I've gotten older, I realize that, for me, I've called thousands and thousands of games. But for that kid that's getting off that day, this is a family heirloom for him.
It sure is.
He will watch this. His children, his children's children, and his children's children's children, his family will put this in a family archive and it will last forever.
So when did you realize that? When did you realize that was what was going on?
I always kind of knew it in my heart.
Okay.
In my spirit, because I wanted to be out there.
Yeah.
I would see myself and I would ask myself, I would say to myself, and I would just feel it. I wish I was at Cameron giving these dudes the business. This guy is, I remember the first time I saw Allen Iverson. I was like, he was a freak of nature. Like, yeah. He was my height.
Yep.
And he could touch the top of the square.
Yeah.
And it just brings me so much joy to watch these kids or these pros who are still kids, who are kids to me now.
Yeah.
Do what they do. And I mean, Steph Curry, I mean, phenomenon. Just and I get to be a part of that, and to me that means everything.
Speaking of which, friend of the show Steph Curry, but he tracked you down after his last Davidson game, needed a picture. What was that like?
Well, it's interesting because even though he was a college All-American, who knew?
Right.
Who knew? I mean, yeah. He put on a show in Detroit that weekend, but nobody saw. Nobody saw this.
Nobody.
Like,
yeah.
I never seen anything like. I think to be honest with you, Rex, and I love Steph. That's my boy. I'm just so proud to know that I saw that with my own eyes, and my voice is on that. Because every game that you call, and I see you calling games, so always keep this in mind, no matter the biggest or the smallest, every game is a historical piece. We are not just sportscasters or journalists. We are sports historians. And I'm very proud of that. I'm very, very proud of being a part of our profession. So I always say, lately I've been saying, you know, I think Steph Curry has single-handedly ruined the game of basketball because he's the only one that can do all that. And all these other fools are taking 25 and 26 foot jump shots early in the shot clock. I was watching Golden State the other day. It's like the shot clock is at 22 and they're launching up threes down by four in the fourth quarter. That don't make sense to me. I don't understand this analytics. Them dudes play ball, them analytical dudes. Because it doesn't make sense. I mean, right now you can look at Golden State as this podcast is being broadcast, and they got no inside game. Nobody can get to the basket.
I think if Clay's himself, you know, it's totally different. Hopefully he'll get back to being himself. But no, I'm with you. It is. I'm piecing together now, you know, your ability, you know, because every game is not a nail biter. Every game is not a great game. Your historical knowledge, not just in sports, but that you studied, has to have prepared you well for storytelling. Your memory is obviously great, but how has your history background really helped you with what you do?
You know, I think the most important thing is to understand everybody's creation story. You know, understand something about the person. Rune Arledge, the great ABC executive president during the Howard Cosell days, said the most important thing was to be up close and personal. What makes this person tick? Why are we interested in him? You know, okay, we see that he could jump high and dribble good and shoot the ball from far out. But who is he?
Yeah.
Who is Rex Chapman? Who is the boy king? Who, you know, his dad was a coach, came from Kentucky. What makes him go? What is his relationship like with his mom, mm-hmm. his dad, his community? What is he into? How does he feel? So when the game is a dud, you got to be able to go take a deep dive into who our human beings are that are participating in these activities that we're interested in watching.
Steph Curry's record-breaking three-pointer, Jason Tatum's buzzer-beating alley-oop, Ja Morant's poster dunk. NBA Top Shot is where the greatest moments from NBA history are turned into officially licensed digital collectibles. NBA Top Shot has evolved trading cards by making it easier to buy, sell, and collect by removing the hassle of grading, shoeboxes, and shipping fees. You can buy or sell moments in a few clicks and access them at any time on your phone or computer. Your collection is always at your fingertips. Start collecting Top Shot moments in any way you want. Collect rookie moments from future stars like Evan Mobley and Cade Cunningham. Collect throwback moments from former NBA stars like Shaq and Allen Iverson. Or collect moments from your favorite team to gain access to exclusive perks. Grab your starter pack today, and Top Shot will give you $20 back to start your collection and pick up some of your favorite moments in the marketplace. Go to about.nbatopshot.com/bballnews and get in the game today. You were growing up in broadcasting just as the Knicks were kind of, they were going to the finals. What do you remember from those teams and including your, you know, your classic Allen Houston buzzer beater?
The Knicks, man, that was one. That was one of the golden ages of my life. And just being around Patrick Ewing, Charles Oakley, Larry Johnson.
Franchise, yeah.
I mean, just being around Beast. You know, he really helped make my career because he took me, he wrapped his arms around me. He saw I was young. He saw that, you know, working in New York, man, it's not a game. It's no joke. It's a lot of doggy dog stuff going on. But because of Pat and us forming that relationship that we formed, and Pat letting me do long form interviews with him.
And he's not easy to get close to. You know that. Yeah. I love that dude. Yeah, love him.
The first day I ever met him, man, you know, I had to make one of those decisions. You know. The first day I met him, they had sent me into the Knick locker room to interview the players. And the most important thing was to get Patrick. It was my first day. Right. Wow. And I went over to Patrick's locker and it was so crowded that I couldn't even get a microphone in. So, you know, it was my first day. So I said, OK, well, I'll go interview some other guys and then I'll come back. So I interviewed some other guys and then I came back and Patrick was just sitting there as he always would after games with his robe around his shoulder, his Knick robe and his foot in two big feet in big buckets of ice in the corner. Yeah. So I went over to him and I said, hey, Pat, how you doing? My name's Gus Johnson. My first day on the job. Can I just want to ask you a couple questions. And Patrick was like, nah, man, interviews are over. So I said, no, but I got some other guys and I just want to ask you a couple questions. My first day. No, I said interviews are over. And I said, I start to panic because my producer said, don't come back unless you got Patrick. And I'm panicking. I'm shaking a little bit. I said, no, Patrick, I'm sorry. It's my first day, man. Howie Singer, my producer, told me that I have to get you, you know. He said, hey, man, I told you, interviews are over. No interviews. So it was one of those points. And I couldn't even help it. It just came out. I was like, motherfucker, this is my first freaking day on the job. If you don't interview me, if you don't let me answer some questions, big fella, you not getting out of this room. I guess that Detroit shit just came out of me, man. I didn't know I was so scared. And he looked at me and scowled. And you know, Patrick, with that smile, all of a sudden that big old smile came on his face. He said, come here, boy. All right, I'm going to do some interviews, but don't be late next time. And from that moment on, and he'll tell you the story.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Rex, hop. I was scared. I was like, nah, man, I'm not getting fired on my first day. That's like Craig getting fired on his day off. You know what I'm saying? On Friday.
And people don't understand Patrick back in that day. I mean, he was New York. I mean, he was this city and he was the franchise. Man, it took some big balls to do that.
Yeah,
man.
Yes. You know, that was a golden age for me too, Gus. And you were a big part of that because I just moved to the city then, living in the shoebox and 28th and Broadway. And so I'd watch the first quarter or sometimes listen on the radio because my bootleg cable wasn't working that day on MSG. And then I'd listen to you. After the first quarter, I'd run over to the Garden and all the tickets, they're just giving them away. $2, just give me $2 for it. And then go watch the rest of the game. But that was that, you know, beginning when you're young and in the city and that vibe. I mean, that was a magic.
I have a question for you, Josh. Were you living and going through that in New York, or was Lloyd doing that?
I had a pseudo name in New York. He likes to bring up, and I was Lloyd.
He just decided to go by Lloyd for a couple of years in New York.
My name's Lloyd, and would just walk around. And later, like people, once I got on TV and stuff, like people would write me like, "Hey, Lloyd, motherfucker." Lloyd.
Yo, Hop, I had one too. I was Christian.
All right. Lloyd and Christian would have been.
They would have been boys.
Oh, my God. In New York City that time. Oh, we were on those streets, Christian and Lloyd.
No question. Hey, we're going to let you get going here. Let's wrap things up. Hey, thanks for doing this, Gus. I got to ask
a couple of things. I want to know, because one of my favorite phrases you say, and I don't want to butcher it, but when someone's really fast on that football field, I love this. What do you say?
Getting away from the cop speed. You know, I got in a lot of trouble for that initially. They said I was being racist. They said I was being racist. I said, I'm black. I said, first of all, how am I being racist? Explain that to me. So, because you're inferring that only black people have getting away from the cop speed, I think. So how am I going to be racist against my own people? A, and B, you must have not watched that show Cops. Because I saw a lot of white boys down in Florida flying.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
And then I just find it so interesting in your career because you were so energetic and talkative and have all these catchphrases. And then one of the most seminal moments of your career is a football game. I have 2015, Stanford, Notre Dame. There is unbelievable game back and forth. And then Stanford kicks a winning field goal. The place goes crazy. And what's your call on that?
I didn't say anything.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You just watched.
Just let it breathe.
Just let it happen. I mean, it's beautiful, you know, it just throws it in this time where you're just taking it in and you don't need anybody to usher you through this. You don't need someone's eyes and voice at that moment, at that specific moment. And that's one of the things you're known for is that call, which was not a call. Beautiful. How did you think of that at the moment? Because everything you've been trained is to put a button on this thing.
You know, I took a lot of act. I've been at Hop. Me and you got a lot in common. I've been an actor since I was in high school.
Right.
And when I got to New York, I went into some really intense acting classes with some incredible teachers. One in particular is a man by the name of Douglas Turner Ward, who was the artistic director of the Negro Ensemble Company in New York City, and all the great African-American actors came through the NEC. Denzel Washington, Sam Jackson, Adolf Caesar, Hattie McDaniels, Felicia Rashad, Debbie Allen, just to name a few, but there is just a who's who's list. Bobby Hooks established that, Kevin Hooks' father, with Douglas Turner Ward. And when Doug would come over, you know, acting class for us was cool because sometimes acting class was sitting at the bar and just having conversation. You know, he used to always say, you know, I said, well, you know, the Meisner technique and the Adler technique and, you know, Stanislavski and all that stuff, I would be, you know, trying to be smart with him. He was like, man, look, just play the words. What do the words say? Whatever the words say, play. And then once you get it into your system, the most important thing, he said, and the hardest thing for an actor to do is to listen. Once you master being able to listen in your sports casting, because the acting was to help my sports casting, because I always believe in education. I think education is game. He said, once you understand that in your sports casting, you'll be able to create moments out of silence. And so that kid, Conrad Ukropina from Pasadena, California, still remember him now. He kicked that field goal in Stanford, beat Notre Dame. During that time, when he kicks that field goal, historically, you know that for the rest of his life, he's going to be a hero at Stanford, even when he's an old man. And his children and his grandchildren come to celebrate him at his university. When he kicked that field goal, there was nothing to say. I just wanted to hear it. I wanted to see it. I wanted to feel it. Because if you can hear it, you can feel it. And I just thought I didn't have anything to say. I would have been corny if I would have said something.
You would have forced something in there. Man, it's just beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Gus, what's your favorite movie?
I have to be honest with you. My favorite movie. This is going to sound so crazy, and it's going to, it's not going to sit well with you, Rex.
Oh, I already know what it is.
I love Hoosiers, man.
Mm-hmm. I knew that was coming.
I love Hoosiers, man. When he goes on the court and he measures the rim, and they're in Indy.
Mm-hmm.
Gene Hackman.
Yeah.
But right now,
I thought you were going to go with Texas Western.
Say what?
I thought you were going with Glory Road. And I was going to be like, God damn it.
That was good about Texas Western.
Hoosiers. Hoosiers. Yeah. Nicely done. Hoosiers.
I'm a corny guy like that. But I'm telling you, man, I'm ODing on Yellowstone.
Oh, it's good.
Oh, my God.
So good.
What about front row center for any act or group, dead or alive? You can see anyone perform for you.
I'd like to see Malcolm X. I would love to hear him.
This is the first Malcolm X we've had, isn't it, Josh?
Yeah, I believe it is. Yeah,
we've had some good ones. Love it.
I would love to see him to speak.
At what point there was a lot of iterations of Malcolm X. You know, the beginning, the middle, and unfortunately towards the end. Like, when would you like to hear him speak? When he was first preaching about, you know,
Islam,
and I was trying to think of the leader's name at the time.
The Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Yes, you know, that, or when they had their riff, or when he went on his journey and through the Middle East and Africa and came back and was kind of a different person. When would you like to hear him speak?
I'd like to hear him speak early and late.
Yeah.
When he finally became the communications minister for the Nation of Islam, I'd like to hear him live speak as he talked about the things that were taking place in America at that time for Black people. And then I'd love to hear him speak when he came back from Mecca. And just to compare and contrast how his philosophy may have changed.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Good answer.
That would have been a cool thing to be a part of.
Gus, I can't thank you enough, buddy. We got to do this again. Please come back.
Hey, Rex, man.
This is an honor.
I've been a big fan of yours for a long time. I've seen your life, and I'm proud of you, man.
Thanks, bro.
I'm proud of you for persevering, you know. As Sylvester Stallone said in one of his Rocky movies, the testament of a champion is not getting knocked down and then getting back up. But can he get knocked down, get back up, and continue to move forward? That's what you're doing, brother. And thank you,
man. I love that.
Thank you. Thank you. Can't thank you enough, bro. Much love.
It's been a pleasure. And I got to tell you, Augustus Cornelius Johnson, I have to tell you that I don't always write. I wrote notes from this. I mean, and I don't do that. Herophony? Is that right?
Herophony.
Like an epiphany, but it's a... Gotcha. Got the roots now.
Like a and feeling then, of... Yeah.
That I really love delight in the excellence of other people. Mm-hmm. That's a great way to go about your life. Thank you for that.
I want to say one more thing, Gus. You said something earlier, and it was about, you know, that I didn't know at the time I was going to play in the NBA. I remember the first time Dick Vitale said my name. I was in high school. I remember the first time Al McGuire said my name. I was like, you know, I heard after the game, I'm a freshman at Kentucky, Al McGuire's at our game. And for many of my teammates, you know, if not all of them, it's something you'll never forget. And that you're aware that going in this stage of your career, that these young men and women that you're covering, this game is going in their vault, and it's something they'll never forget. So just thank you. I thank you for all you're doing.
I appreciate you saying that. And I appreciate all of you guys' kind words. I love, you know, I think one thing we're missing in the world sometimes is fellowship. Sometimes men need to talk to men. Women need to talk to women. Men and women need to talk to each other. It's spiritual. And I think that you guys establishing something like this in such a positive way, knowing that all young people are going to face obstacles in life, that's a guarantee, you know, but how do you deal with obstacles? How do you deal with setbacks? How do you deal with heartbreak? And quite often it's through prayer and it's through community. And I like doing things like this with good people. And Rex, I've known you for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. Hop, I'm getting to know you, but I know y'all two are boys, and the love that you two share with each other is real. And you don't have to do this, what you're doing here, but you're doing it because of the greater good. Marcus Aurelius said the most important thing in the world is for you to be a good person and to strive for the greater good. And I see you guys doing that in your show.
Much love, bro. Thank you, Gus. Let's do it again sometime.
All right. The boy key.
Thanks, man. Can't thank you enough. All right, bro.
You got my number, right?
I got your number.
All right, man. Hit me up. Give Hop my number, too, just in case.
I will.
Where's Hop? In L.A.?
He's in Texas.
I'm in Austin, Texas now.
Oh, we coming down there to do the Alabama game, man. You should holler at me.
I will.
Are you there on the weekends?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
You've been hanging out with Matthew McConaughey down there?
All right. No, I have not.
Yeah, but anyway, hit me up. I'll get you some tickets to that game if you want to go.
Oh,
and maybe you get a field pass, you know, so you can hang out.
Oh,
fantastic.
Hey, be careful now.
Careful. No, I got you.
What up? All right, Gus.
All right, Gus.
Thanks, bro.
Talk to you. Have a great day.
You too.
Yeah, you too.
That was amazing. I'm just going to go. I just want to go and, I don't know, just somewhere alone and feel bad about myself.
No, you can do it right here with me. You are a piece of shit.
Misery loves company. You're a piece of shit, too.
Thanks.
Yeah. Team. We're a team.
I mean, yeah. God, I feel stupid. What? I was like, half the whole thing, I was like.
Herophony. Cosmic law. It's all over my head.
Effervescence.
It's all over my head. What a fascinating brain.
Wow, really? And I had no idea.
No, me neither.
No idea that this was going to be the conversation.
No. You know? What a fascinating guy.
We didn't really get into it, but he's taking classes at Harvard right now.
I mean, yeah, he's bypassing some of the upcoming NFL season, I think, to take classes at Harvard.
Yeah.
At 55, 54.
Yeah. It's all these successful people that we have on here. All of them are intellectually curious.
Yeah.
And their entire life, that's why they've achieved what they've achieved. And but none of them just sit around now. They do things like that.
Yeah.
Like go back to school and learn new things. And I mean, from Shaq to, you know, Isaiah to everybody we've spoken to, Katie Lang and Martina Navratilova and the things they're doing now. It's humbling. And again, I feel like a piece of shit.
Yeah, I'm with you. But I think the common thread, though, is, I mean, so many smart people, obviously, so many talented people, but the drive, drive, that inner drive to, whether it's to succeed or to not fail, either way, there's something there that's just super uncommon. So feel fortunate.
One thing he said that was interesting, too, was talking about, you know, once he found announcing, he was just good at it. And and he just loved, I mean, it consumed him. And that's the passion you have to be successful at things. And it made me realize, you know, all three of us in some regard, because some people, you know, aren't good at what they love, know, and to have to be passionate about something and we've succeeded, if it's lucky, you know, you see it in guys, basketball players that are 6'8", have everything, and just don't
like to play.
Know, and it's like they have
and can still be good, really good, some even great players.
That's
just crazy.
That's nuts. To find a passion and you're talented at it is blessed.
You know, when he was telling that story, it took me to, interviewed our friend Jason Sudeikis a while back. And the one thing that I asked him, because he went to college, play junior college basketball. He loved basketball. All he wanted to do was play basketball. And after his freshman year, the coach kind of told him, hey, man, you know, your grades aren't so good. We might kind of want to redshirt you. And at that moment, he kind of pivoted. He took some, he had taken some drama courses and been in the drama club in high school. But the second that he kind of pivoted and went into, you know, the acting and comedy, he said he was just eaten up with it and just felt like, you know, and driven, you know, going to every club and watching everybody. But it's amazing. And I love that because, you know, most of the people we have on have some kind of sports background.
Right.
And we're all kids. We all think when we're 9 and 12 and 15, we're going to play sports for a living.
Yeah.
And for most of us, and I've seen it happen with my friends, you know, all of our friends. There comes a point where you have to pivot, and now what are you gonna spend your time doing?
Mm-hmm. But that's, it's very productive. Interesting too, because I saw that interview you did with today. He said something that is true about all these people, the sports background and fundamentals, and the way you have to learn to work,
be diligent,
and team. And the
rules, attention to detail,
having coaches that you know, instill that in you, then when you pivot, you know how to handle this new career because of the organization of sports.
Team sports.
Beautiful.
So. All right, buddy. Well, another good episode. That was 46. Let's meet up next week back here, same time, same channel, for the Rex Chapman Show with super cool Josh Hopkins, powered by basketballnews.com.